Herzlich willkommen zum Ozasach Podcast. Welcome to the, well, I don't know how to call it in English, but like, I think pocket podcast. Today we'll be doing it in English because our guest today, or my guest today, is Andreea Stănescu. Andreea comes originally from Romania, was first in the financial sector, I think was a financial analyst, now being more into startups innovation. But since you did quite a few things and quite a few interesting things, I would actually like to welcome you first and hand over the word to you to introduce yourself, where you're coming from, what you're doing, and so on.
Hello, and thank you for the invitation. Very happy and excited to be here. So yes, I'm Andreea. I'm coming from Romania. Now Switzerland is home. And my expertise lies in managing transformation programs. I think today transformation, it's a bit of a buzzword, and everyone does transformation, and it's very difficult to put a stop between change, program management, and transformation. And that, of course, makes it entertaining but challenging in the same time. How I built my expertise in transformation, I started initially doing consulting and doing financial analysis, as you said, working a lot in M&A and transaction advisory. And then from that, I move a bit more to transformation within finance, managing changes and reorganization in finance functions. From that, it was quite of a easy and natural step to look over transformation from a more overall strategic point of view and focus on the overall aspects of the organization, looking at different functions and so on. Being in Switzerland now for 15 years, as I said, this is home now. And it's always good to connect and to speak about the things that are close to my heart and the ones that bring me joy. So thank you very much once again for the invitation.
Sure, thank you for the intro. I mean, you've been in finance, but then someone moved over to more broad, like to transformation. I mean, how did that happen? Like, you have a passion for it. Like, did the interest show early on boards, or like, how was that?
I think it was a bit of a magic, if I can say it like that. We all need people that, or situations that allow you to shine, and when someone believes in you. So for me, it was that kind of situation where change happened within the organization. Apparently, I had the right skills and expertise to manage it. And having that opportunity ahead of me, I accepted. It was not an easy shift, and it was a lot of things to learn. But I believe that it's drilling down to what I enjoy doing the most, like trying to find things that are challenging and finding a solution and moving along with those.
That's actually interesting. I mean, I do find, but then maybe it's also a question of the type. I think changing, transforming stuff, it's always way more interesting than just being in the status quo on the. And but right now you're like kind of self-employed, like you don't have an employer, right? Or you have a job, because on LinkedIn you have like five different things that you're doing, basically.
I think that's my goal. I would love to have a career portfolio and doing different things in the same time. I believe the area on the job market, when someone is doing one thing only, it's a bit obsolete. And the market, we see that it's going in that direction. So yes, you're right. I'm doing a lot of things right now. As a beginning of this year, set up my own consulting boutique company. So working for myself, but working with customers in the life science, small, medium-sized organization. So particularly what I do, I help companies to drive and to manage change within their organization, however that change looks like. For small company, in terms of a startup, can be designing the business operating model to become successful and to sell their products, while for a, let's say, more medium-sized organization can mean a changing or a shifting, pivoting, or managing a bigger project within their business.
But how did you get your first clients?
That's a very funny question, because I always believe that when I go to advertise what I do, I put my CV on the table and people are looking through my CV and they're like, okay, she has the skills and expertise and she's good for the job. The reality is not like that. I think today your biggest asset is not your CV. Either you are working in a corporation or you are working for yourself or trying to set up a business. I think the biggest asset is the type of relationship and the deepness of the relationship you have with different people that can lobby for you, can promote you, and they can speak about you out there. I think when I started I started thinking about setting up a business, I realized I've never been a networker myself. I mean, you connect with someone on LinkedIn, you're connected, and you just stay connected there. You don't do anything with that connection. Well, now I'm looking more on the deepness and nurturing the relationship that I build with people. And through those relationships, someone knows someone that needs help in an organization. And this is how the first customer came out.
Interesting. But does this mean that you strategically look at which connections you have? Then you think of, I don't know, oh, I'll call him, we'll just have lunch, eventually talk.
No, it's not strategically, actually. I think it's more about, or it is strategically in a way that
You're open for it.
I'm exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm open for it. So I navigate in an ecosystem where you have mainly life science related companies. So in that kind of industry, you have small, medium-sized organizations, startups, or different ecosystems where founders, I engage with founders and VCs and different stakeholders that are part of board, board members or different startups and so on. So that kind of like creates the opportunity, but I'm not necessarily looking for it strategically, kind of like I need to speak with this person and I kind of go to do whatever it takes. I think that's a little bit seen not nice, and it's also kind of stepping into someone's private area. In today's business environment, it's more about creating that kind of situation where you come across with the customer at the same table, and then you start having the discussion or start having the conversation.
Well, that makes sense. But would you call yourself a good networker?
I'm learning, or at least I hope I am. Definitely, I'm approaching things in a different way than I was before. I think if I'm thinking about ourselves, we met on LinkedIn, if I can say like that.
That's true, basically. Now we're sitting here in the same room together.
Exactly.
I mean, you're calling yourself Chief Transformation Architect, Office from Demand. And I mean, meaning, I think you're leading a lot of like interesting projects, but what is like maybe a standout project that you're like particularly proud of, or something that was very special? So anything you can like tell us?
To be honest with you, I'm proud of every project because it's kind of like creating my baby and creating that kind of things where I drive things and I leave an impact. I'm creating an impact. I leave a mark at the end. What brings me the most joy is working with people and seeing people evolving and changing in the situation where they are. Because transformation, usually how it used to be in the old school scene, was more of a project management, very structured and very paced activity. While how I like to work is really changing the mindset in the people to drive the transformation rather than changing the organization and then trying to convince the people to change for something that maybe they were not part of taking the decision or they do not understand. So my biggest, proudest moments are actually seeing the change that happens in the people and seeing how this change drive new ways of engaging, new dynamics within the team. And that new dynamics eventually evolves into a change in the organization. And organization is practically a living organism that will gonna continue changing. And creating that kind of mindset in people, it's, I think, in my regard, creates also the success of driving transformation and change journeys within any organization. It can be of 5 people or it can be of 1,000.
That's super interesting. It makes completely sense. But are there other like do's and don'ts in transformational projects, phases and so on?
There are a lot of do's and don'ts. And I think, again, depending on the way how you approach things, I give you a very concrete example. So, for example, there was a situation where the team wanted to, the manager wanted to allocate some tasks within the team in a different way. And there were some candidates that were having the, let's say, the manager considered that they have the right skills and expertise to manage the new activities within the team and have this reallocation. The challenge was that the people didn't want to take the new responsibilities. They were feeling comfortable on what they were doing and they wanted to continue in the same way. While stepping in and having different discussions, it iterates that actually someone else in the same team that wanted was not having the right skills and expertise, but they were willing to take the new challenge and step in into the new role. at the first glance, they were not necessarily the right fit for the role or not necessarily the right fit for driving those activities. But I think having this kind of mindset to learn and to try to want to try new things, it was enough, especially in this situation, to kind of reallocate the work in a different way, to put more on the spot, the person that actually initially was not the, the right candidate for that. And is this a right way of doing or not? I don't know. But I think what is important in the transformation is to really understand what is driving the change and what is actually the problem. Because in some situations, what happens is that you think you have a problem, and when you start discussing, the underlying problem sits somewhere else. So here, the challenge to fix was to reallocate work within the team. But actually, the team dynamic and the way how it was structured was not accommodating that. So changing something, iterating and testing to see how it works was, a, let's say, a successful situation where eventually managed to drive the change. Of course, can be situations where you do the same approach and it's not working. I think the best way of managing transformation is to look for the things that the organization needs in that specific unique set of circumstances. As I mentioned earlier, organizations are like living organisms and they change on a constant basis, which means that the way of working and the people within the organization are changing in the same time. So just bringing best practices from what works for other similar companies is not always working. But keeping a flexibility and bringing what is relevant for the organization in that specific situation, for me, I think this is the biggest do like this and not like that in any kind of change or project management programs.
Okay, interesting. Now, I mean, you also are a startup mentor.
Yeah.
Based on LinkedIn in two places. Now, how did you get to startups? Because I could imagine transformation is much more interesting in big companies. Like, how did you get into that?
I think at heart, I'm an entrepreneur myself. I tried to set up my own business a couple of years back, which it failed. And for me, it was, okay, it failed for different reasons. I didn't have money to keep on going. So I went back to the corporate environment. Nevertheless, I think it was a very, very big lesson that kind of stayed there. And a startup is not about having a success plan and you just follow the plan and eventually you have a business that is generating million per month. I think startup is more about that iterations and leaning in to try new things, test it, see how it goes, go out there, check with the customers and be more reactive of what the customer actually needs versus what you think the customer needs. And again, having that mindset and that kind of heart inside me, I found it very easy to work with startups and to mentor startup founders to develop a business model where eventually they are successful. The challenge that I am faced as a mentor in most of the situations where I speak with founders is that they create a product. They create a product which is very technical. They can speak about the product in very technical and very detailed terms. But eventually, you're creating a business, you're not creating a product. And why someone that is already a customer existing on the market that is using some similar products will convert to yours, or why they will buy your product. And in most cases, is most of the time I'm hearing, well, it's better. It's just better than others. Yes, it is better. But how do you convince the customer is better? How do you fit the need that the customer has? And to me, this is the kind of conversation that I really enjoy having and seeing that sparkle in the founders, like, aha, so this is like, okay, let me come back in 1 week after I do some homework. And then we keep having the conversation.
Interesting. So it's not just, I mean, you're not like just doing pure transformation per se, how most people would imagine it. It's really about the right mindset, the right working, being agile and so on and so forth, testing the market. It's kind of more like that, or are you more also a personal mentor then?
And asking the right questions. So I think I'm a little bit of everything. I mean, on a journey myself, because I'm coming from the corporate environment and doing transformation in big setup, multi-regional, multi-year programs and very dynamic into kind of transition to a smaller scale and working with smaller teams to create that kind of change mindset that allows to become more agile and more innovative on a longer term. And also bringing the let's say, corporate mindset on how a small organization or how a corporation is looking to a small organization, what a startup needs to do to prepare for acquisition in the next 5-7 years, which usually it's very focused on the product design, product launch, gaining market share, gaining the customer, which is great. And then eventually you are so into that, that once you're starting generating revenue and you are growing, it becomes a little bit challenging on how to scale up or how to create that kind of structure that allows you to keep on growing, but in the same time kind of stabilize and secure the business on a longer term, which eventually we're going to make it attractive for the potential investor.
I see. But is it more interesting to work with startups or with bigger companies?
That's a tough question because I think in the, but maybe I think it's easier with the startups because they have a more entrepreneurial or more experimental kind of mindset. While in the organization, and especially in the big ones, unless you have a culture that allows innovation and allows experimentation and doing mistakes and learning from that, which is all about innovation and establishing an innovation mindset, it's a bit more bureaucratic and you are hitting some walls on decision, governance, waiting for some of the things to happen. While in startup is a bit of like you have an idea, you just go out there, try it, it's working, it's not working, you learn something, you iterate, you start again. So I think I'm a little bit in between now on transitioning, but I find myself more on the startup environment working.
Interesting. You didn't say the word more fun, but you said easier, but I guess it goes in the...
It is more fun as well, yes.
Also, you are at Superlab Swiss. I think you're there in different areas, biotechnology, medtech and so on, and you're an expert in the Innovator Club. So are you also a mentor there or...?
Yes, so I'm working with Superlab on an innovation program they have offering the possibility for specialized experts like myself to mentor startups that they are part of the Superlab, and I'm doing that with in collaboration with other ecosystem around innovation and startups in Switzerland. For me, what it is really brings a lot of joy, and I really enjoy doing it, is giving back to the people that I work with and giving back from my expertise. So having this kind of conversation with the founders and initiating some of the discussions that help them to navigate better through the design of the business model or navigate better through how they set up their own business. It's something that I find very rewarding and challenging and entertaining in the same time. I did myself some courses with the Startup Campus on how to set up a startup myself, because as I mentioned, in my mind, there are still some ideas ongoing, and in my heart, I'm still thinking about this and that, and how can I bring it to life.
So will you found a new startup in the near future or not?
I hope so. Again, there are different ideas ongoing. One of the things that are very close to my heart and I'm trying to initiate now and hopefully will be launched soon is helping a young generation to get closer to the leadership concept. I am a mom and I have a teenager at home, and sometimes having a discussion about leadership and seeing the perspective of her friends about what does it mean today to be a leader, it's a little bit harsh. Young people don't want to be leaders today, and not speaking only about my daughter, but in general, also different statistics say that. And I'm trying to bring that a bit in a different perspective. So the idea behind it will be to interview different leaders from different from different industries, different backgrounds, cultural, demographics, and so on, and speak about leadership to raise awareness that leadership can take different shape, can take different ways in execution, and there is not only one model of being a leader. And hopefully by doing that, to a bit raise the awareness about what leadership can mean in the future, and also to inspire the young generation to get closer more to becoming a leader and not only doing their job as there is kind of like a stamp put on them right now.
Interesting. But maybe a bit of a provocative question, like the Gen Alpha or maybe a bit also Gen Z.
Yeah.
Like this workforce that is here or is coming, is it the bad workforce in your opinion?
No, I don't think it's a bad workforce. I think it's more of a disruptive element. But in any evolution, you need the disruptive element. In a transformation, you cannot continue doing, for example, things that you keep on doing just because you did it like this. You need a disruptive element or a disruptive personality within the team to kind of try to do things differently. I do believe that the Gen Z or Gen Alpha, it's maybe a little bit more different than the other generations, not in a good or a bad way. We were also different from when we were the new generation versus what our parents were expecting. But you have these cycles within the different generations that have been across the years and we're going to come. It's just being a little bit different. It's also a way of how you accommodate this new generation into the working environment, because most of corporations are not ready to do that. Most of corporations are speaking about AI and digitalization, but they are not ready to mix how humans were going to work with robots or how a team dynamic or team responsibility will look like when you have individuals in a team and half of the team is made of humans and half of the team is made of robots. Who is taking the decision? Who is having the responsibility or accountability? Who has the governance on doing things? On a robot side, it is very easy to say, oh, I'm sorry, I did an error. Tell me what to do it. But when a human says that, it comes to your file that you did something wrong. So when you do an evaluation, maybe that's not seen in a good way. In the same way, we're not ready. I think most corporations are not ready to work with the new generation. They demand things differently. They work differently. And the structure and the way of working in the big organization, it is very bureaucratic, slow, which we're going to clash, I think, with the new generation.
Super interesting. We're coming slowly to the end of the podcast. What I wanted to ask you now, something completely different, but like you came from Romania to Switzerland, like my wife also did from Brazil to Switzerland. Like, how do you like Switzerland? What do you like? What do you maybe miss from home? Like, what it was special when you came here? I love to hear this, like these insights.
That's a very interesting question, to be honest, because I was on a journey myself when I came to Switzerland. Was a big cultural shock. It was very different. I mean, in Romania, it's more like a Brazil Latino spirit, very warm, very outgoing. We are friends with everyone. Everyone comes from a birthday party or for a barbecue in the courtyard, and you play music and so on. Now I'm exaggerating a bit, but it's quite of a different setup and cultural background you come with when you come to Switzerland. Now, 15 years later, I think I'm more Swiss than other people that I see around me claiming to be, I mean, being Swiss and born here. Now Switzerland is home and I'm enjoying here very much. Here is where we have our family, we have our friends. It's true that when I go back to Romania, I'm a little bit nostalgic because as a country and as a culture, we are a bit behind on the evolution that are happening in Europe, unfortunately. I would love to see things in a different way, but it is what it is. And I think we also went on a journey ourselves as a country from the communism and being where we are today. Nevertheless, there is a big gap between how Switzerland is and how Romania is. Here, as I said, it's more home, but I appreciate the structure. I appreciate the access to medical care. I appreciate the access to education. And also all the other, let's say, opportunities and facilities that Switzerland offers as a country that most of the time I don't find that in Romania. I just came from Romania last week. And it is nice, it is messy, it is hot, things are happening not by the book, but it's also kind of like an adaptation and a flexibility that you are learning to deal with. While in Switzerland, it's a little bit more rigid, you know exactly what is happening, you know exactly how things are ongoing. And it's a bit of dealing with everything and trying to be adaptive on both situations.
I see. Yeah. Also super interesting. I mean, although you say many positive things about Switzerland as well, I do think we can, let's say in Germany would say, cut off a slice of, let's say, the culture of other countries being a touch more warm, a touch more welcoming, a touch more like making friends a little bit faster, maybe being less in the circles. I love Brazil. I love the culture there. And yeah, I would love to have like a mix of everything a little bit here. At the same time, the way how we are also helped us to preserve how we are.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then led also to like good things in Switzerland for sure. Great. So, I mean, that was basically it. Is there any last thing that you would like to say or something to say that is especially important to you or anything?
No, I think I thank you very much for the invitation. Once again, it was lovely to meeting you on LinkedIn and being here to record the podcast together. I admire you a lot for what you are doing and where you brought Nick in today, and keep on going. You're really doing a great job and looking forward to seeing what lays ahead.
Thank you. That's super nice. Now, very last question, how to get in contact with you in case someone is interested in you as a person and your services, where can you be found?
I'm very easy found on LinkedIn. I think that's very convenient for everyone, or I think LinkedIn is the right way.
Perfect. So then Andrea Stanescu, Andrea with two E's.
Yes.
Which is not always written like that in Switzerland. So put two E's and then you'll find them there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.